Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Another M Radio Network. Don't send help. We survived the tornadoes, today's tornadoes here in the Atlanta area. Yikes. A program note for our Phoenix and Internet listeners. Stay tuned after my program tonight for continuing live coverage of tonight's primary results in Oregon. We will have those with Jeff Farias of KPHX 1480 AM in Phoenix. So hang around tonight when this one's finished. We have some hyperspeed hype to share with you from spokesmodel Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perina, frantically struggling to wiggle out of the Jerusalem Post article that claimed Bush and Cheney plan to strike Iran before being run out of town at the end of their illegal reign of terror. Her double-speed, double-speak denials must be heard. So stay tuned for that. You know, when Bush was in Israel and made his half-witted speech about appeasers and referring to Barack Obama and referring to Democrats and just the craziness that this this guy did or does on a constant basis, one of the things that hovers in the background is Senator Barack Obama saying that he would negotiate with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. There's only one problem with that. Obama never said that. Never. As a matter of fact, no less a right-winger than Joe Klein at Time Magazine says he can find no evidence that Obama ever said he would negotiate with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Now, there's a reason for that. We'll get to it in a second. And according to the research department of Time Magazine and the Obama campaign, he said he would negotiate with the Iranian leadership. But on matters of foreign policy and Iran's nuclear program, the guy in charge is Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. It is not Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad is to Khomeini what Bush is to Dick Cheney, a figurehead, a mouthpiece, a marionette, a puppet. That's all. Now, as of today, according to I believe this blog comes from Huffington Post. I'm not sure. But as of today, McCain is still accusing Obama of wanting to negotiate with Ahmadinejad. So why doesn't the McCain campaign and other assorted, clammy, ugly Republicans, why don't they ever accuse Obama of wanting to negotiate with Khamenei? Why is it always Ahmadinejad? Well, there's an answer. Because Khamenei isn't quite the vociferous anti-Semite that Ahmadinejad is. And as we keep hearing, you see, Barack Obama has a Jewish problem. So it's much easier to lay anti-Semitism around Barack Obama's neck by continuing to refer to a statement he never made, that Obama would negotiate with the anti-Semite Ahmadinejad. It's really unbelievable what they are, they being the Republicans and the Clinton campaign and the media, what they are doing to Barack Obama. It's just astonishing to watch the dirty way that they are going after him. I've said before, I thought I was pretty much immune to most of the crap that flies through the air during a political campaign. But the media, who whipped up the Jeremiah Wright thing, almost turned it into a living, breathing creature. It was almost as though Jeremiah Wright's video speech or sermon from however many years ago took on a life of its own. It started to breathe and eat things and go to the bathroom. Or excrete, I should say. Yeah, go to the bathroom. That sounded very juvenile. Isn't that one of the signs of a living thing? It eats. It excretes. All of a sudden, these images of Jeremiah Wright, a huge animated thing created by the media. But that wasn't good enough because, damn it, damn it, damn it, Obama kept picking up delegates and voters and superdelegates. Oh, no, we can't have this. What else we got? Let's focus further on the race thing. Come on. Like Appalachia will never vote for a Negro. Where's Appalachia? Well, you know, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Southern Ohio, Kentucky. You know, Appalachia. Well, that kind of worked, but then the ace in the hole, the card up the sleeve, the rabbit's foot in the pocket, the magic penny in the toe of the shoe is always, always anti-Semitism. Psst, he's an anti-Semite. What? He's an anti-Semite. Why is that? Because he wants to sit down and talk with the guy that said Israel is a stinking corpse. He did? Yeah. Oh, my God! I wouldn't vote for him. It's sickening. It's sickening. Ahmadinejad is a freak. He's a halfwit. He's the shock troop. He's the guy that stands out there and makes the crazy comments. And the real power rests with the Council of Guardians, clerics, ayatollahs, who are appointed to their position of power by Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Ahmadinejad is not the leader. He's the loudmouth. He's the one that got, quote, elected, end quote. okay. Now, later, in I think it was today, Joe Klein, or maybe yesterday, confronted McCain with this question at a press conference. Why doesn't your campaign point out that Khamenei is the head of Iran, not Ahmadinejad? McCain clearly gets the basic facts wrong on everything. And McCain went on to insist to Joe Klein face up that ultimate political authority in Iran rests with Ahmadinejad. Even mocking Joe Klein when he challenged him on it. Oh, my God. So, as the blogger writes, let's be clear, Iran has a very complex system of government. But at the top sits Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who essentially has only to be accountable to the Council of Guardians, made up of clerics appointed by him. So Ahmadinejad is not the leader. And when McCain says that it's the president's job, he, talking about himself, when he becomes president, it's his job, McCain's job, to educate the public on questions of policy. So if the average American thinks that Ahmadinejad is the ultimate leader of Iran, that's what he said. That's what McCain said. He said, I think if you asked any average American who the leader of Iran is, I think they'd know. Well, if one of the jobs of the president is to educate the public on questions of policy, not this jackass in the White House now. If that's what one of the jobs is, then it's up to the president to dissuade them of the notion that Ahmadinejad has any power at all, not to encourage it. Remember when back in 2002, more than half of Americans thought Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. But this is what we do in this country. We have a media that are filthy, dung-eating, rabid dogs, and we have political candidates who don't know who's who.
If I could find them now, could I make amends? How does the story end?
And so to bed.
Best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. Also, I didn't mention we have a moment with Bob tonight, so all kinds of good stuff. A moment with Bob and some too much cappuccino Perino. What more could one ask on a late spring evening? So anyway, back to this. McCain is... I mean, he reminds me so much of Bush. This would be a third Bush term, George Bush term. McCain is a dolt. He really is a complete dolt. He has absolutely zero understanding of global politics. Is that, well, that's a good way to put it. He has no understanding whatsoever. Certainly does not understand the situation in Iraq created by his good buddy, the one who attacked his wife and child right before he, McCain, sucked up to him. He has no idea what his good buddy George W. Bush has unleashed in the Middle East. He doesn't know whose side who is on, hasn't a clue, and insists that the leader of Iran is Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who has as much power in Iran as George W. Bush has in the United States, which is to say... none, unless it is given to him by, respectively, Ali Khamenei or Dick Cheney. Matter of fact, they even rhyme, don't they? But the media, for some reason, love this war criminal. Why do the media continue to love war criminals and cowards? What is up with that? If they're not pimping Hillary Clinton... they are pimping John McCain and obliquely referring to Barack Obama's Jewish problem. Always play that card. When everything else fails, the man's an anti-Semite. What? Yes. You're kidding. No. Always play the anti-Semite card. Always. The media love it. They will go for that like a duck on a June bug. As soon as they get even the slightest whiff of a way to play the race card or a way to play the anti-Semite card, they play it. Why? Because the media in this country are a bunch of whores. No offense to sex workers. A bunch of whores. Pimping for, or the pimps, I don't know. I don't even know anymore. I just know that they are not reporting news. They are not informing us. They are not living up to their constitutional protection in the first By God Amendment. The first one, not the 7th or 28th, the First Amendment. They don't do it. So, two things. Barack Obama is a Negro. He's also an anti-Semite. Don't forget it. Now, this is beyond me. I can't work this through in my head. The U.S. House of Representatives has approved by a vote of 324 to 84. 324, yes, 84 no. Legislation today allowing the Justice Department to sue OPEC members for limiting oil supplies and working together to set crude prices. Yes. The bill would subject OPEC oil producers, including Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Venezuela, to the same antitrust laws that U.S. companies must follow. I know. 324 to 84. The legislation also creates a Justice Department task force to aggressively investigate gasoline price gouging and energy market manipulation. You know, like Enron? You remember Enron and the Southern Company and all these companies that continue to just jam it into our body orifices while they make mountains, billions, tens of billions of dollars in profit. So the Justice Department? the Bush Justice Department is going to investigate price gouging? The House of Representatives, in passing this half-ass bill, said Americans are at the mercy of OPEC for how much they pay for gasoline, which this week hit a record average of $3.79 a gallon. So they're going to sue OPEC. They're going to sue. The U.S. is going to sue the oil-producing nations and do what? How long before the oil-producing nations say, sue us? You're going to effing what? You're going to sue us? Listen closely, America.
What? What do you want us to hear?
Listen.
I'm listening.
You hear that squeaky noise?
Yeah.
That's us turning off the valves. No more oil for you. No more oil for you. Get out of my oil restaurant.
We'll show them. We're going to sue him.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
President ought to do is he ought to get on the phone with the OPEC cartel and say, we expect you to open your spigots.
Spigots? Be careful. Quick email from Jennifer in Mississippi. Dear Mike, I'm a resident of one of the most conservative districts in Mississippi who just elected a Democratic candidate, Travis Childers. We've been working for 6 years, individual by individual, $20 at a time. The fear of Obama is almost palpable here. You can almost hear the honeysuckle rustling at night. The Negroes are coming. The Negroes are coming. Dick Cheney and Karl Rove couldn't do it here. Negative slurs were the common fare of all the Republican advertising. Laura Bush made a robocall the Sunday before the election. She must have taped it in between the rehearsal dinner and the wedding for Jenna. The pendulum is swinging. Get out of the way, Hillary. We're ready for real change. Take a cabinet seat and get over it. I think what Jennifer means is that Obama has got it made, even in Mississippi. All right, it's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Yes, once again, A Moment with Bob. I think I just said that, didn't I? Hey, Mike. The war ground on and on while the president told us that progress was being made. And then the enemy made a massive surprise attack. The American public, which had been led to believe that the enemy was incapable of launching such an attack, began to have doubts about the war in Vietnam and their president. Bobby Kennedy said that the Tet Offensive, quote, shattered the mask of official illusion with which we have concealed our true circumstances even from ourselves. And he also said, quote, total military victory is not within sight or around the corner, end quote. On March 16, 1968, Bobby Kennedy declared his candidacy, stating, quote, I do not run for the presidency merely to oppose any man, but to propose new policies. I run because I'm convinced that this country is on a perilous course, and because I have such strong feelings about what must be done, and I feel that I'm obliged to do all I can, end quote. On that day, a groundswell of hope began to build. Eugene McCarthy had previously declared his anti-war candidacy and had been narrowly defeated in the New Hampshire primary by President Johnson. But McCarthy had initially entered the campaign with few illusions of winning. His candidacy was primarily an anti-war statement. Bobby Kennedy was the pragmatic idealist who could go beyond making a statement. He would end the war if he was elected president. The hope that America's future could be changed for the better spread across the country and continued to build. Kennedy won the California primary on June 4, 1968. In August, at the Chicago Democratic Convention, he would challenge Vice President Hubert Humphrey for the nomination. Humphrey represented the business-as-usual Democratic faction. He was incapable of distancing himself from Johnson's failed stay-the-course Vietnam policies. But within minutes of winning the California primary, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And the hope for a better future was destroyed. When he was shot and killed, it was crushingly obvious that there wasn't going to be anybody like Bobby Kennedy or what he represented for a long, long time. Real change in America, embodied by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy, is gunned down. That was the lesson learned by anyone who cared to pay attention. In America, politics without hope is business as usual. As race and anti-war riots plagued the nation, Democratic nominee Hubert Humphrey preached an almost delusional politics of joy and lost the election to Richard Nixon. It was going to be business as usual for the next 4 years, and the next 4 years, and the next 4 years, and for the next 40 years. And now it looks like the hope is back. Barack Obama is no Bobby Kennedy, but the hope he has inspired in millions of people makes him this generation's RFK. Regardless of his voting record, regardless of his advisors, regardless of his lack of experience, Barack Obama has done something no other presidential candidate has done for decades. He has inspired the hope that America can change for the better. It's not going to be business as usual. If Hillary Clinton debates John McCain, both will desperately try and fail to conceal their business-as-usual roots. Their platforms are essentially the same. That the American machine can be tweaked with a few turns of a screwdriver here and there to get it back to running efficiently. They will argue that their tweaks are better than their opponents. And we've seen that performance over and over again. For generations, no one really believes it anymore. If John McCain debates Barack Obama, we will see a Republican who has enthusiastically thrown away whatever principles he may have had and embraced everything the Bush-Cheney regime has ever done. John McCain symbolizes that business as usual that has led us to this bleak present and to an even darker, hopeless future. By simply standing on stage opposite John McCain, Barack Obama has already proved that it doesn't have to be business as usual anymore. The hope that change is possible propelled him to this place in American history. Hillary Clinton has given speech after speech after speech, but she has not been able to touch the place in us where hope lives. The men and women who voted for Obama in the primaries and caucuses placed their reawakened hope for a better future upon his shoulders, and he has articulated that hope back to them better than any other candidate since Bobby Kennedy. Obama's politics, his positions, are not liberal or progressive by any definition. He is not leading any radical movement. He has been swept up in front of this wave of hope, and his supporters believe that he might be transformed by their hope into someone who can lead this nation out of its decline. But Obama's not only a symbol. He is different from Hillary Clinton and John McCain in that they have been clearly deranged by their political ambitions. They will stoop to anything, and he has not. In these strange times, decency is a rare commodity. We have lost so much since the Bush-Cheney regime took over. We can't continue with business as usual and have our country survive in any recognizable form. It can't be business as usual because everything is riding on this election. If we don't change the direction we are heading, we'll end up where we're going. And what is left to give up before this isn't America anymore, but some weird American Nazi Stalinist oligarchy? Barack Obama isn't going to be able to fix America any more than Bobby Kennedy could. But maybe this time, where there's hope, there's fire. Another Moment with Bob, courtesy of Bob Alexander at superbeans.com. Brought to you, I should say, by your friends. Brought to you by your friend at superbeans.com. Thanks, Bob. Yeah. That says it pretty well, doesn't it? All right, what have we got here? Hillary Clinton wins another Appalachian state, 65% to 30%. Well, just crushed his little brown ass, didn't she, huh? Puts an end to that. What? Oh, there's still Oregon? Okay, we'll see. You just can't trust white people. You just absolutely can't trust white people, can you?
I'm sorry, I'm just still freaking out. I heard her giving a speech earlier tonight, and or actually today in the car, and she's talking like she's won more electorate, well, not electorates, but she's actually had more of the popular vote than Obama, and she's counting Michigan and Florida like we live in Stalinist Russia, and it just drives me bonkers because I want to slap this woman upside the head, figuratively speaking.
Oh my God, you're as violent as I am!
Figuratively speaking, and say, if you don't think your vote's going to count, don't you think that might influence someone's voter habits at the polls?
Right.
I mean, if you think, maybe I won't vote. So she's saying counting Michigan and Florida, one state where she was the only one on the ballot, and in both states where the folks knew going into it their votes weren't going to count.
Well, this is what we've talked about this before.
Is it delusion? Or
no.
I mean, how do her supporters, I'd like to hear from a Hillary supporter. I would really love to hear someone tell me, call up, tell me personally.
This is
how you reconcile that.
This is following the Soviet model. If Bush and Cheney are Nazis, Bill and Hillary are Soviets. It's that simple.
You don't have to pay the lag. You better thank God for that. Turn on the TV. There's hope. Somebody's acting crazy. There's hope. You bet it'll drive you crazy. There's hope. But I'm taking back my power today. There's hope. Gas prices, they just keep on rising. There's hope.
Republicans, the pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, maybe, it's small, all small case. Maybe there's some hope. On The View, was it today? Joy Behar, is that how you say her name, Behar? Joy Behar, the, quote, liberal, end quote, laid it out there for Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who is the brain-dead conservative. And I want you to hear this. This is on The View. Who cares? Is that ABC? Is that an ABC program? Or is this a, yeah, it's ABC. It's Barbara Walters' show.
I'm sorry, I forgot to care.
I know you did. All right, listen, Joy Behar, or Bear, I don't know how you pronounce her name, B-E-H-A-R, because I don't watch The View. Steve sent this to me. But here's a 30-second clip of Joy Behar, and the answer, the kind of snotty, little, ridiculous, non-sequitur-style answer that comes from Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Listen to this. Well, all right, hold on.
Interesting and ironic that George Bush Sr.'s, George Bush, this one, yeah. His grandfather, this one, the late, well, I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but in this case it's fun. He was a United States Senator, Prescott Bush.
Yes.
Okay, he was a director and shareholder of companies that profited from their involvement with the financial backers of Nazi Germany. Okay? This is his grandfather. He has no business talking to Jewish people when he's got this right in his backyard.
If you want to talk about backyard, then how come you can bring up this backyard, but then it's not all right to dig into Obama's backyard?
Oh, shut up. It's not all right to dig into Obama's backyard. Yeah, Obama's grandfather supported the Nazis, too.
So maybe there is hope. I mean, when something like that is said on network television, can you imagine... The demographic of The View I have read, I don't watch the program because I'm not in their demographic group, but it is women, mostly women who are at home between the ages of 25 and 50, roughly. That's not the official demographic. What is it, Kathy? 18 to 34 or something. But can you imagine how many of those women had this on today or yesterday when it played and heard, what? George Bush's grandfather helped the Nazis? What? Of course, everybody in the United States should understand this. Jesus Christ, because of the Nazis, 50 to 75 million people died. It was an event called World War II that, oddly, lasted for a shorter period of time than George Bush III, this little creep-ass, has got us into with Iraq. But why doesn't every single American understand this? That the President of the United States had a grandfather who financed the Nazi death camps, the Nazi Wehrmacht, the Nazi Luftwaffe, and brought death and destruction to the planet. And this miserable little bastard stands in the Israeli Knesset and talks about Nazi sympathizers or Nazi enablers or appeasers. But you see, this is where we are. This is where we are. On an entertainment program on ABC, which I believe is the first time it's ever been out there on a network program. I don't know, maybe someplace in news 8 years ago, somebody said, oh, and by the way, candidate George W. Bush's grandfather, Prescott, was somebody who worked with the Nazis back in Germany. And now let's move on to sports. But there was Joyce Behar. Thank you. Or Joy Behar. 8,000 emails come in. Thank you. Joy Behar. Is she Jewish? no, I don't know. Is she? Joy Behar? No? I don't know. I have no idea. Gabby's looking at me like I just said, are we married? Oh, my God. And but there it was, Joy Behar. speaking truth. And then this, who is Elizabeth Hasselbeck? Who is that? I know she's gotten involved in a couple other little dust-ups. Didn't she get into something with Rosie O'Donnell when she was on that show?
Yeah, her big claim to fame, the way she got this job, is she was on, I think, the second season of Survivor. And she was really...
She was a contestant?
Yeah, that was it. She'd never worked in media before. She was really perky and cute. And she became kind of like a little America's sweetheart.
As Reg at TV News Lies
before that show, Jump the Shark.
Rosie O'Donnell was fired from The View for her anti-war stance and for her daring to raise questions about 9/11. Joy will not last, Reg. Well, we'll see. We'll see. But that would be very interesting. So, mark it. You heard it. If you don't listen to View and you happen to just accidentally tune into this program tonight, you heard it. And we'll play it for you again a little bit later in the program tonight. Joy Behar letting Elizabeth Hasselbeck and the rest of the crew there. And the cut is longer. We just wanted to play the 36 seconds that Steve sent. But somebody else had mentioned, somebody sent me the transcript. Don't send me transcripts. Send me sound bites. This is radio, not television. But anyway, thanks to Steve for sending that in. We have a break coming up here. When we come back, we're going to listen to Too Much Cappuccino Perino today, who oddly sounds an awful lot like Elizabeth Hasselbeck. If you listen to Too Much Cappuccino Perino, when we come back, you will notice that. Joy Behar is Italian. Behar is her married name or her stage name. Cindy writes. Oh, really? Okay. And Reg says, no, she's Italian. I don't know from Behar. I don't know that name. That name is not in Italian. What is this? Huh? Here's another one. Five people telling me she's Italian. Really?
God, how many people watch this show? I'm a little freaked out right now.
I don't know this name. Behar. What is this? Huh? Is she a cousin? I don't know. I don't understand. What? What? Behar. There's no I on the end of it. What? Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Okay, Robert I guess he's in New York, wrote in, and so did Pop Lewis and Justine and a bunch of other people, too. But here you go. Behar, Joy Behar, Emmy-nominated Italian-American, was born Josefina Victoria Osciuto in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York. Daughter of Rose, a seamstress, and Gino Occhiuto, a truck driver. She married Joe Behar, of Sephardic Jewish descent. In 65, they divorced in 81, had one daughter, blah, 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 blah. Robert writes in about Joy Behar. I know a few things. She used to be one of the few liberal voices on talk radio in New York City. She did drive time on WABC radio, the same station that carried the flatulent fascist Limbaugh, but she's really more of an entertainer and comedian. She isn't really a person up on issues, but has a good liberal heart, Robert. And Justine writes, Mike, great clip from The View. Go Joy, who better know watch your back. It reminds me of an Oprah episode in the infamous run-up to the Iraq massacre when the clip of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein was shown, just once, of course. The audience gasped, and for just a second before Oprah returned to interviewing, but just for a second before Oprah returned to interviewing that lackey, Thomas Friedman. I weep for my country, Justine. The subject line says, nanosecond of truth on the TV. Yeah. When is that on? Is that on early? I know you don't know. You have no idea.
I'm trying to care, but I know it's on in the morning when I'm usually either sleeping, trying to sleep, or being bonked in the head with Molly going, I want my channel, Where's Curious George, with a remote control. But to the little Hasselback survivor chick who said, you know, why can't we look into Barack's past? Oh, I think you can. I think you should. And if you find any Nazi sympathizers, I fully believe those should be exposed.
Who financed the death camps.
You know, if he had a grandpa who was financing Nazis, I want to know that.
Yeah, me
I
too.
Really do.
Me too. All right. Going back to the House of Representatives overwhelmingly approves legislation today allowing the Justice Department to sue OPEC members who are, they're just charging us way too much for our oil, and it's making our gas prices go up, and we're goddamn Americans, and we're not going to stand for this. We don't have to pay $7, $8, $9 for gasoline, a gallon. No, no. What do they pay in Saudi Arabia? 59 cents. We're going to sue them. That'll work. Aren't the Republicans always yelling about trial lawyers and lawsuits? And but the vote in the House was 324 saying, yeah, sue the bastards. 84 saying, I really don't care. That was the vote. And a Democratic representative, one Steve Kagan of Wisconsin, who sponsored the legislation, said, quote, this bill guarantees that oil prices will reflect supply and demand economic rules instead of wildly speculative and perhaps illegal activities, end quote. What? How? If there is speculation, it doesn't come, Representative Steve, at the wellhead. It comes in Chicago at the commodities market or someplace at the futures market. It doesn't come. Oh, Christ. Why bother? Why bother? So we're going to sue them. We're going to sue Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Venezuela. We're going to hold them to the same antitrust laws that U.S. companies must follow. Oh, is that a joke or what? Now, what rules are those that U.S. corporations follow? Oh, please give me a break here, will you? Hey, you American corporations, you got to abide by them, their antitrust laws, and no more of them tax shelters offshore, and, you know, you can't go into downtown Baghdad and murder 17 people and then just get another contract from the government. No, you got to stop doing that, yeah? Prairie 2 writes, OPEC won't object to this new law since it specifies that they be treated the same as American oil companies. They are probably, even now, trying to figure out what they will do with their new multi-billion dollar handouts. Yeah, that's very true, isn't it? It's pretty astonishing, though, don't you think, that the U.S. Congress would pass a bill trying to sue. Oh, God, never mind. What else we got here? Before we get to too much cappuccino Perino. Oh, yeah. This is from a blog by, I guess it's Jennifer Thompson. And this is about the Kansas City Star newspaper in that city is outsourcing all of the jobs of those who are in the advertising services department. The Kansas City Star is sending their entire digital advertising team to India. The jobs are being outsourced to Infosys Technologies in Bangalore, India. The employees in Kansas City were notified by memo, and the following day the Kansas City Star included a brief, a note in the paper in the business section. The news reported that 9 employees were let go. However, in fact, the blogger writes, there were several more in total. And then the blogger writes, now, if this weren't enough of a blow, the kicker is this. The employees will retain their employment until after their replacements were being flown in and put up here in Kansas City. After their replacements have been trained by the employees being fired. And furthermore, according to a blog comment from the best friend of one of those laid off, the Kansas City Star is not giving letters of recommendation to those being let go. Another blog site, Gawker.com, pointed out that McClatchy is the owner. McClatchy Newspapers is the owner of the Kansas City Star, and has taken the same action with other holdings such as the Miami Herald, the Sacramento Bee, and the Raleigh News and Observer. Outsourcing. Why? Why is that? Somebody explain to me real quick. Just send me a mental telepathic message. Don't write. Don't email me. But what is the difference here in the Kansas City Star outsourcing their advertising fulfillment work to workers in India at, one must assume, a much lower rate of pay and no fringe benefits? What's the difference between that and this? Somebody cruising by a local Home Depot in a pickup truck, picking up illegal Mexican immigrants who will work for $6 an hour laying bricks at a construction site. Now, somebody tell me the difference. In the one case, the illegal Mexican workers and the employer in the pickup truck are both violating the law. And people like Lou Dobbs will go on television, and representatives in Congress will froth at the mouth and go into these herky-jerky movements that they go into when they're trying to get something across that's really serious to America. And everybody goes absolute bat-wacko over the guy in the pickup truck and the illegal Mexicans. But when the people in the editorial or the ownership suites of McClatchy Newspapers decide to outsource jobs to India, somebody tell me that not the difference in form, but the difference in substance. What is it? What is the difference? Oh, I know, one's illegal and the other isn't. Oh, I get it. Okay. What is the difference? What is the difference? You know, my point of view the other night about immigrant undocumented, don't you love that term, undocumented immigrant workers has raised a bit of a sandstorm in my email folders, but that's all right. You know, I read most of what comes in, the ones that get through, get past the automated response filter. But somebody tell me the difference between McClatchy Newspapers outsourcing to India and the guy in the pickup truck picking up three illegal Mexicans, illegal workers, to go lay bricks. Huh?
Unleaded regular, forget about supreme. We can't afford our gasoline. We can't afford our gasoline. The prices have become obscene. You'll get screwed at the pump, so bring your Vaseline. We can't afford our gasoline.
If jobs are the most important part of one of my jobs, how do we encourage people to hire more people?
21 past the hour. Here's all of a sudden, I found myself reading the Israeli press a lot, Haaretz, of course, but also the Jerusalem Post, God help me. It's been a long time since Wolf Blitzer was the Washington bureau chief for the Jerusalem Post, and now, of course, he is one of the head personalities at CNN, the old former U-boat commander, Wolf Blitzer. But anyway, here's the story, the first of three. The White House on Tuesday flatly denied an Army radio, that's Israeli Army, Army radio report that claimed U.S. President George W. Bush intends to attack Iran before the end of his term. Army Radio had quoted a top official in Jerusalem claiming that a senior member in the entourage of President Bush, who concluded a trip to Israel last week, had said in a closed meeting here that Bush and Cheney were of the opinion that military action against Iran was called for. The official reportedly went on to say that, quote, the hesitancy of Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, end quote, was preventing the administration from deciding to launch such an attack on the Islamic Republic for the time being. The White House dismissed the story. You want to hear it dismissed? Let's hear it dismissed. This is from the briefing today. Tuesday, Spinderella was asked several questions by the crack White House press corps about the article in the Post that suggested the giggling killer is determined to go out with a bang, or several of them with a strike against Iran before his term expires. First reporter begins. Dana, I want to ask you about the denial of the Jerusalem Post story. When you say that the White House's preference is to solve this through peaceful diplomatic means, that still leaves the door open, though, to planning an attack. I'm not saying you're planning an attack, but by your specifically saying that your preference is to have a peaceful diplomatic resolution means, doesn't it, that that leaves the door open to an attack?
Well, I don't see how that changes. I don't think that what I said today in response to a Jerusalem Post article that quotes an Army Times piece that quotes unnamed officials who were quoting unnamed officials seems a little bit less than ethical to run that as a big story on their website. but what I said in terms of, as the president has said before, no president should take options off the table when dealing with any situation. But I don't think I said anything different from what I've said before.
Dana, you don't deny the premise of the Post article, the Jerusalem Post article, which was that a senior U.S. official said that the president and vice president were of the opinion that military action is called for in Iran.
I have no knowledge of anybody saying that to anybody in Israel.
You don't have any knowledge of anything, you crazy, psychopathic, blonde idiot. I have no knowledge of anybody saying that to anybody. Just because she has no knowledge of something said in Israel doesn't mean squat. I mean, plausible deniability being a Karl Rove mandate and credo, what do you expect? Look at Ari Fleischer. Look at how many times Ari Fleischer, as a co-conspirator, in so many crimes committed by the Bush administration, stood in front of the press corps and said, well, I have no knowledge of... The line of questioning got a little bit stickier for the Neutron Blonde, which we will... Can we do this now? Can we do it now? Okay. The next reporter questioned why the White House isn't denying the validity of the Post story if there's no there. You know, I mean, the whole thing, why not just come right out and deny it? Listen to the back and forth with the ditzy chick. As the next reporter says, the story also claims that there are two camps in the administration, the president and vice president, who are leaning toward an attack, Secretary Rice and Secretary Gates, who are pulling them back. Is there any sort of split in the administration?
This is something that I've seen reported over the years, and I think it's just people surmising or trying to string along storylines and rumors that aren't based in fact. The president's team is well knitted up.
What about the substance of it, though? Do the president and the vice president feel that an attack is called for, whether someone said that in Israel or not?
Keith, I feel that I just answered that question when I talked about what our policy is.
Can you answer yes or no to that?
I just said what our policy is, and that our preference is to solve this diplomatically, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question.
It does answer the question, and that is what we are working with our allies to do.
Of course, it answers the question, but she can't answer the question because, after RA, they learn to have to keep their spokesmodels as poorly informed as possible. And B, because they might be planning an attack on Iran and certainly aren't going to discuss it with their press. The press or the American people discuss our plans? We don't do that. Then we are ready for the attack. It comes. Yeah. Ich bin ein Berliner.
That means I am a... pastry, I think.
you think she's good enough?
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. We have one more here from Too Much Cappuccino Perino at the briefing today. The crack White House press corps, or the White House press corps on crack, take your pick, is really bearing down on Miss Perino today. The various members of the press corps, the crack White House press corps, asking all kinds of pointed questions regarding the Jerusalem Post story. The Jerusalem Post story. Why don't any of you guys write a story like the Jerusalem Post story, and then they can question you about... Oh, never mind, Jesus. It all culminates in this exchange between Legally Blonde and a reporter who asks her point blank to say yes or no if Bush and Cheney are planning an attack on Iraq. Reporter says, but you're not giving us an answer, Dana, because everyone's preference is always for peace, but someone could still think that an attack may be called for while desiring peace.
I think that when you have a long-standing policy, such as the president has, and he's working with international allies, we've already passed 3 Security Council resolutions. We're now working on an incentives package. But at the same time, the president has said that no president, no matter who it is, either him or anyone in the future, should take options off the table. It's not a smart way to negotiate.
Do the president and the vice president think an attack is called for on Iran, yes or no?
I just said what the United States policy was, which is our preference is to try to solve this diplomatically.
Well, skepticism seems warranted here, because in the run-up to the war in 2003, the line was officially that, you know, negotiations were still called for and that there was no decision to attack. When, in fact, subsequent reporting has shown that there probably was a decision to attack well before the attack took place.
Right.
So why shouldn't we be skeptical of the claim that, you know, there's no intention to bomb Iran?
So you can be as skeptical as you want to be. I stated what our policy is, and I don't have anything else that I can give you. I'm not going to be able to... If you're going to be a skeptic... That's, you're right. You're the fourth estate. Go for it.
And the questioner there is CBS News' Bill Plant, who is reporting news. And I don't have an axe to grind Bill Plant. I think he's from the old school. Hell, he must be in his early 70s. He's a reporter. He was reporting news when this little yellow-haired twit wasn't even a glink in her father's eye. You know, the audacity of this press, White House press person, the audacity of her to condescend to a reporter. There are, I always make weird, nasty comments about the crack White House press corps because I think they don't do their job. In that particular setting, maybe they do the best they can. Scratch that. But there are reporters who show up there. You know who they are. Bill Plant happens to be one. Helen Thomas happens to be one. There are several who try to pin down these weasels, these slimy weasel bastards who work for this corrupt administration. They do try. But the condescension. If you're going to be a skeptic, that's your right. You're fourth estate. Go for it. See, at that point, I think Bill Plant should have stood up and walked up to the podium, and I realize he would have gone to jail for this, but man, it would have been great news, wouldn't it? And taken her across his knee and paddled her ass until she called for the police. Oh, he's advocating violence against women. He's advocating violence against White House employee. He's advocating violence, violence. This goddamn Malloy's got to be taken off the air. Quick, notify National Organization for Women. He's advocating violence.
Well, the salient point in that quote that I think needs to be repeated is what he was expressing, what Bill Plant was expressing skepticism over. He was basically saying, we've seen this line before.
Right.
This, oh, well, of course we would prefer peace. We'd like it if Saddam would disarm himself. We'd like to solve everything diplomatically, but we can't take any options off the table. And all he was saying was, we've seen it before. Of course we're skeptical.
Right. I think most of us get that. And it's a shame that, you know, all of us get that. You get that, Kathy. I get it. The listeners get it. The one person who didn't get that is too much cappuccino perino. So her answer is a smarmy, patronizing comment to a guy who's, like I said, been reporting news since before this little twit was even born. Visiting U.S. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said Sunday while in Israel. Nancy Pelosi was there again. Jesus, how many times does this woman go to the Middle East? And why? Does she have frequent flyer miles to this extent? So Nancy Pelosi is in Jerusalem, or in Israel. I don't know if she's in Jerusalem. Another, in an exclusive interview with the Jerusalem Post, visiting U.S. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi said Sunday that Washington must assert to the rest of the world that if they want to be friends with America, they need to do more to keep Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. Pelosi said the U.S. needed to be more, I love this word, proactive in saying to the countries of the world, including Russia, China, and the Muslim countries in Asia, that, quote, one of the pillars of U.S. foreign policy is to stop the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction to anyone, end quote. Well, Nancy! Yo, Nancy, there are a few countries that refuse to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and when you made that statement, you're in one. That's right, Nancy. If you are so goddamn interested in stopping the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, turn to the people that run the country you're in and tell them to disarm. Or tell them to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Do it, Nancy. Don't go to Israel and posture. Aren't we in enough trouble already? You're going to go to Israel and you're going to stand there and make a half-assed statement like that? One of the pillars of U.S. foreign policy is to stop the proliferation. When did anybody in the United States try to stop the development of nuclear weapons in Israel? When did anybody in the United States insist that our great and friendly ally Israel sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty? When? So, ignoring the rule of holes, Nancy says the U.S. needs to make it clear to everyone, including the Europeans, that their policies on this issue, Iran's nuclear ambitions, would be a term of friendship with the U.S. and a measuring stick of benefits they could derive from that friendship. Oh, Jesus. Really, Nancy? Huh? Nancy Bush? Who are you? The U.S. cannot stop nuclear proliferation alone, Pelosi said in the interview with the Jerusalem Post, and she added, quote, if these weapons proliferate, they are a threat to everyone, not just to the U.S. and not just to Israel, end quote. Oh, God. Nancy, there are probably another 194 countries on earth other than the United States and Israel.
both of whom are armed to the teeth, one of which is the only country ever to have used nuclear weapons to incinerate civilian populations in an act of war. Will you stop it? What is wrong with these people? Pelosi, Reed. Pelosi said that to stop Iran's nuclear march, short of a military strike, something she did not rule out as a last resort, quote,
you have to go all the way, and people have to know you are deadly serious, that if you want to be our friend, a central pillar of our foreign policy is to stop the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, end quote. How many times are you going to say it? Why don't you go to the leadership of the country in which you made the statements and say the same thing? Nancy, I dare you. I double dare you. I triple dare you. Come on, Nancy. Do it.
Or did you go to Israel just to shore up your Jewish voters back in your home district? Is that what you did? Sure sounds like it. Because what you are displaying is absolute duplicity, hypocrisy, and two-facedness. You are in a country that raised its middle finger to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Nancy? Oh, she added that an attack by Tehran on Israel certainly, quote, cannot go unanswered, end quote. Pelosi said that a preemptive strike on Iraq would have consequences that needed to be considered. Son of a bitch. American woman, listen to what I say.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Inner liberal warrior?
If I had a mind to,
who wrote that?
Like
somebody sitting in a bar stool down here at Manuel's Tavern? Oh, is that from, what's his name? Grasshopper? It's 10 before the hour. Last one from the Jerusalem Post tonight. You thought I was kidding, didn't you, when I said all of a sudden Jerusalem Post and Haaretz are becoming some of my main sources of information. I love this one. The heading is, Iran's nuclear program may spur an arms race. Really? You're kidding me. Iran's disputed nuclear program has sent a wave of interest in atomic energy across the Middle East, a think tank said Tuesday, warning that it risked setting the scene for a regional nuclear arms race. Iran's program? Why would that be? At least 13 Middle Eastern countries either announced new plans to explore atomic energy or revived pre-existing nuclear programs between February 2006 and January 2007. Jesus God, that's 2 years ago. The London-based International Institute for Strategic Studies said in its report. The report said countries such as Saudi Arabia, Algeria, or Egypt could soon feel the need to match Iran's nuclear ambitions. Israel, the United States, and others have accused the Islamic Republic of covertly seeking nuclear weapons under the guise of civilian nuclear programs. Iran insists its intentions are peaceful.
And the article goes on to say that countries like Jordan, Morocco, and Tunisia have comparatively few energy reserves. They've got nothing. And we're spurred on to this because they've got to have some energy someplace. Egypt and Turkey are motivated both by exhaustion over high energy prices and wariness of Iran. But this is the part that I like. The report said that it was difficult to squeeze nuclear weapons out of legitimate IAEA-monitored nuclear power programs, but it warned that the peaceful or the perceived threat of an Iranian nuclear bomb increased the risk of civilian nuclear programs being diverted to military uses. See, that's another thing. See, the IAEA is part of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Agreement that has signatories up and down the political spectrum, with two or three notable exceptions. Among them is Israel. Now, should Israel have nuclear bombs? If
Israel wants to have them, why not?
Should Iran?
Same answer.
But you see, once you sign on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is all about nuclear weapons, then you are required to admit people like Mohammed al-Baradi, or whatever the hell his name is, who is the chief UN nuclear weapons inspector, into your country as he goes into Iran to sniff around, as he went into Iraq looking for their viable mushroom cloud nuclear weapons program. Remember that one? But he is not allowed into Israel. Why is that? Seriously, why is that? Apparently, it's because the Israelis are entitled to nuclear weapons, because their very existence is at stake, even though they have beat the Christ, so to speak, out of all of their Arab neighbors two or three times without the use of nuclear weapons. But that's kind of beside the point, isn't it?
Malloy, you're just a goddamn Jew hater. That's what you are, you anti-Semite.
I really try to understand the stuff that I read. You know, I try to understand. I try to consider the regional biases that might be written into something from the Asia Times or the Jerusalem Post or the New York Times or some stupid ass newspaper out of Moscow or the Beijing government sponsored news. You know, I do. Don't you? Of course you do. You try to consider all the regional, the cultural, the what motivates the writers or the editorialists to write what they're writing. I guess I only do that in order to turn on the filters inside my head so I don't rage like this about why, as horrible as the situation is in the Middle East, the United States utterly refuses, and has through Democratic and Republican administrations since 1948, to treat every single country in that region even-handedly. Now, a lot of people will say, well, that can't be done. It can't be done because the Arabs want to drive the Jews into the sea. I don't think that's true anymore. Jimmy Carter proved that you could develop treaties between Arab and Jew, and treaties that have held now for, 30 years? More? Ahmadinejad, who talks about the stinking corpse that is Israel, it is almost laughable except for the fact that it's a poor choice of language. If that's really what he said. Don't forget, the report that he said about slaughtering or murdering Israel, whatever, turns out to be not what he said at all when it is translated correctly. But Ahmadinejad is a freak. He's temporary. He's here today. He won't be there tomorrow. He's a figurehead. Who cares about him? But the U.S. policy in the Middle East is going to continue down the path that it's on. Anything Israel does is acceptable. Anything Saudi Arabia does is acceptable. Anything that Jordan does is acceptable. But Iran? We just might have to nuke those bastards. About 7 minutes before the hour, you know, one of the after the hour, one of the more seriously laughable reactions to Bush talking to the Israeli Knesset about Nazi appeasers in reference to Barack Obama. Indirectly, obliquely, but the reference there nonetheless. And Democrats in general, Big D back here in the States, it came from Oliver North. Oliver North criticizes Obama as an appeaser. This rat son of a bitch who should still be in prison for absolute treason, a disgrace to the uniform of the Marine Corps of the United States of America and a violation of his oath as an officer and a gentleman. This punk ass Oliver North? Oh, my God. Oliver North was the chief coordinator of the sale of weapons via intermediaries to Iran at a time when they were holding Americans hostage. He then used the money from these arms sales, brokered by representatives in Israel and Iran, to provide the money necessary to fund the Iran-Contras, the CIA, the Nicaraguan Contras, a CIA front operation put together by George Herbert Walker Bush so that they could continue the slaughter in Central America of peasants and Catholic social workers and union organizers and people who are trying to overthrow or at least modify right-wing militaristic dictatorships set up in Central America, financed and protected by the U.S. government. Oliver North brokered the weapon sales of TOW missiles, capable, by the way, of reaching the Straits of Hormuz, capable of doing all sorts of damage to Iran at a time when they were holding Americans hostage. And this slimy, psycho son of a bitch has the nerve to talk about Barack Obama and appeaser? Oliver North committed treason. 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 Oh, my God. Not only that, but John Poindexter, the guy who even as we speak has burrowed into some main artery of the U.S. government where he is drinking blood by the gallons. Oliver North worked for John Poindexter. In November 1986, as the sale of weapons was made public, North was fired by President Reagan. And in July 1987, he was summoned to testify before televised hearings of a joint congressional committee formed to investigate Iran-Contra. The image of North taking the oath became iconic, and similar photographs made the cover of Time and Newsweek and helped define him in the eyes of the public. I am just an officer in the United States Marine Corps. That's all I am. During the hearings, North admitted that he had lied to Congress, for which he was later charged, among other things. He defended his lies by stating that he believed in the goal of aiding the Contras. And he thought the Iran-Contra scheme was, his words, a neat idea. North was tried in 1988 in relation to his activities while at the National Security Council. He was indicted on 16 felony counts, and on May 4, 1989, was initially convicted of three, accepting an illegal gratuity, aiding and abetting in the obstruction of congressional inquiry, and destructions of documents. He was sentenced by U.S. District Judge Gerhard Gesell to a three-year suspended prison term, 2 years probation, $150,000 in fines, and 1,200 hours of community service. However, on July 20th, 1990, with the help of the ACLU, North's convictions were vacated after the appeals court found that witnesses in his trial might have been impermissibly affected by his immunized congressional testimony. Who got him off? The ACLU. And why did they do that with this treasonous disgrace to the Marine Corps? Why did they do this, the ACLU? Because his constitutional rights had been violated. How quickly would Oliver North put the leaders of the ACLU up against a wall in front of a firing squad, given the chance? 15 seconds? Oliver North, a traitorous, treasonous dog, accuses Barack Obama of being an appeaser, even though Barack Obama never said what these right-wing psychopaths claim he did. Sean Hannity, who would love to have sex with Oliver North, as long as Ollie kept his uniform on. Watch them sometimes when Ollie comes on Hannity and Combs. Watch Hannity. Watch where Hannity's eyes go. Colonel North, he calls him. May I see your riding crop, please? Oliver North has the temerity to refer to Barack Obama as an appeaser. Oliver North, who sold weapons to a government that held U.S. embassy people hostage. And, of course, Oliver North's career is one of nothing but disgrace and dishonor. And don't tell me, don't even bring up his combat service in Vietnam. Oliver North is another one, a madman, an absolute madman. This is a guy that pulled his service revolver when he was in Bethesda Naval Hospital, running through the corridors, threatening to shoot anyone who got in his way. Why? Because the bugs were after him. They're all over me. Get the goddamn bugs off of me! Ah! And, of course, that was before he went to work on the National Security Council. Oliver North. Traitor. Ah. And don't the right-wingers just love him, huh? Every time Ollie walks in, they just go weak in the knees, get these little man crushes, except for Hannity. Hannity actually wants to have sex with him. But these little man crushes, oh, Oliver, oh, God, oh, I love you in your uniform. Oh, Colonel, or is it Lieutenant Colonel? I don't know. Colonel, oh, can I touch your gun? oh, it's not called a gun? Okay. Can I touch your revolver?
Can I feel the chickens on your shoulders? Well, those aren't chickens? Oh, okay. What are they? Oh, they're eagles. Okay. I hate these people. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much? All right, we have a break coming, and I think as a means of maintaining my sanity, let's do some phone calls, okay? Not that my sanity means squat. I just thought I would say that because for some reason tonight I feel like I'm right on the verge of an uplifting last 45 minutes. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The ozone layer has no ozone anymore, and you're gonna leave me for the guy next door. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. They arrested the mayor for an illegal favor, sold the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Cord and gave birth to a little Tehran. And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship if he dies and wants to go out in the sky. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some waste dumped in the Nile. Well, one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do. And I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
It is 21 past the hour. And don't forget, stick around immediately after this program. Jeff Farias at our home office, KPHX in Phoenix, will come on to take calls and continue the coverage of tonight's primaries. The results are coming in now. Oregon has been given to Obama by about the same split as Kentucky went to Clinton. But anyway, stick around. Excuse me, right after we go off the air, Jeff Farias will come back on for KPHX listeners and our Nova M internet streaming listeners with continuing coverage. All right? Back to, let us go to the phone calls. Bill is calling from Los Angeles, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, great. I'm doing good. I just drove 100 miles on the hold, but that's cool. I love the show.
Okay. Man, you must have been going fast.
Not really. It's been a while since I've been on. But anyways, I was responding to when Kathy had said she wanted to know the reasoning behind the thinking of Hillary with, Florida and Minnesota.
Michigan, yeah.
I mean Michigan, I'm sorry.
All right.
Basically, Florida probably should be counted because there was some pretty big stuff on their ballot, and they had a really big turnout, okay? But as far as Michigan, with Obama pulling his name off the ballot, you know, that was kind of his political nativity. He had to have known there was going to be some kind of legal deal, you know, and it's pretty much all lands in Howard Dean's lap.
Well, are you saying that because Obama believed the rule book that was handed to him, that because Michigan and Florida violated the rules that everyone had agreed to, that makes him naive, really?
Well, no, it doesn't really. Well, in a way, yeah. I mean, he had to have known it would have been contested.
But no, I think what he was counting on was the Democratic National Committee meaning what they said, that if the states jumped ahead of the primaries, their delegates would not be seated. I mean, that was pretty clear, whether they were Obama delegates or Hillary Clinton delegates or anyone, the Kucinich delegates, it didn't make any difference. The rule is the rule.
Yes.
Obama decided, okay, well, I'll just take my name off the Michigan ballot, probably because it was easier than doing so in the Florida
a primary, both of which all the candidates knew wouldn't count. And now that Obama is saying, well, let's stay with how we started this game, and Clinton is saying, no, let's change the rules, because in changing the rules, it will favor me. Jesus, God.
Well, I kind of agree with you. That's why I think that Michigan probably should go over. But, you know, honestly, I believe Florida was fair and square. And they weren't the only two states that were pushed up, and well, they are the only two that got penalized.
Well, how were they fair and square, as you put it? How in Florida?
Well, like I said, you know, they're saying, you know, that you know, a lot of people didn't turn out because they didn't think their vote would have counted. But actually, they had some stuff on the ballot that they had one of the biggest draws, you know, of voter attendance than they had in a while. So.
But those were local issues. That had nothing to do with the local issues, whatever they voted on, other than the presidential primary names, counted. I'm sure people are going to turn out for local issues. Whatever the down ballot issues were, of course they're going to count. Those are not, the DNC has nothing to say about those.
But was the president candidates on that very same ballot?
Probably. I don't think you get two ballots on election day. Election day is election day.
Well, then if they had a really big turnout, then their names were there. They had the opportunity to check them.
Hey, if I can just jump in here just one second, Bill, because I'll tell you what, I think it's just a terribly sorry situation what happened in Florida and Michigan. But the fact is, I could be sitting there in a voting booth and vote on my ballot initiative that I want in my local community and not vote for a candidate because I'm going to toss my hands up and say, what does it matter? They're not going to count. The problem is the perception of the voter. If you go into a voting booth knowing that your vote is not going to be counted, this is what you were told, then it does color your action. You might just choose not to select a candidate.
Kathy.
That's not fair to either of them.
I know, I realize that, but Kathy, what would you have done in your... So I would have voted anyways, whether it counted or
not.
Well,
but it's not up to me. I mean, what happened was it's the DNC made a decision to outlaw these votes, to overturn these votes. I think they should have had a revote or done something different, but once it was done, you can't go back and erase history because there are a lot of people who stayed home who might have gone and voted for Hillary or might have gone and voted for Obama, and they didn't have a chance, and it's too late for them to say, oops, I had a V8, but Hillary gets to count all her votes, even though Barack's not on the ballot.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't it the Republicans that moved up the Democratic vote in Florida?
No, it was the Republican legislature that decided when their state, and the primaries have to be paid for by state taxpayers. They decided, which they have the right to do, it might have been a Republican trick. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If the candidates agreed to these rules, why does Hillary want to change them now? You know the answer.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. What were you saying during the break?
I was just saying that there's not a good solution. I mean, it's a terrible situation what happened in Michigan and Florida. But you can't have a rule that says your votes aren't going to count here, Democrats, and then expect to count the votes later. You can't have one name on a ballot, and I don't care if Barack took his name off or Karl Rove took his name off or aliens took his name off. It doesn't matter. His name was off.
Well, the other thing, too, in Florida, at the time of the Florida primary, as Prairie 2, I think, just pointed out, Obama was not that well known, and there was some kind of a gentleman's agreement, may I use that term, between the two of them. They would not campaign in Florida, and Hillary went ahead and campaigned in Florida. Now, I don't know that to be true, but that's what I hear. So, this is so typical of the DLC, excuse me, or the Clintons. The Clintons are power mad, whether you like them or hate them. Does anyone disagree with that? I mean, Jesus. And now at this stage of the game, when Hillary is losing, and I think, and again, this is not the Kentucky Derby. This is not the Super Bowl. These are two candidates. At this point, there's a major part of me that doesn't give a damn which one of them wins. I think Barack Obama is more inspiring. You heard the moment with Bob this evening, and I agree with what he wrote. But they're both Democrats. I don't see anything radically different. Hillary Clinton, as Bob pointed out, represents business as usual. Obama represents hope. He may turn out to be a complete dud. But again, the bottom line here, the absolute naked, greedy, grasping ambition of both the Clintons is just almost impossible to watch. If you're a great Clinton supporter and what I just said offends you, there's not a damn thing I can do about that. Again, if you look at the record of Hillary Clinton, you discover something very quickly. She is a corporate shill. I mean, Jesus, come on. If you want that, okay. But she doesn't walk on water. And because she's female is not the primary reason for her to be the next president any more than the fact that he's African of African descent gives Barack Obama the right to be the next president. If you look at the message of both, if you look at the record of both, if you listen to the rhetoric of both, if you look at which what each of them represents, then how can you not come to the conclusion that the better candidate for the Democratic Party and therefore America would be Obama?
I guess what I'm trying to say, and I haven't been articulating it well, is that the problem I have is watching her claim those votes as if they were legitimate, and that's the disconnect in her brain.
Well, that's how this has evolved. It started out with Hillary Clinton as questioning the invalidity of those votes, and then it became a questioning of the process that made them invalid, and then it became, well, maybe they should be considered, and now, goddammit, she claims them.
To watch that
evolution over the past couple, 3 months, the more Barack Obama made it clear that he's going to be the Democratic nominee for president, the more Hillary's message regarding those votes metamorphosed into, they're mine!
I guess that's the problem, there's some sort of break with reality when you stand up in front of cameras and say, I have obtained most of the popular vote because you right. have to count Florida and Michigan for me, without saying, well, no, you don't. I mean, if I'm a voter in Michigan and I go, well, damn, I stayed home because they told me my vote didn't count. How in the world can you claim that that was fair?
Right. Well,
and that was a legitimate election. That's what I'm saying. If she became president, would that be her logic?
Okay. In the land of truth and butterflies and rainbows and happy little fat babies, what you just said is true. But this is the political world where damn near everybody in it is a cutthroat. Damn near everybody in it is a liar, a sneak, a cheat, will wage wars, drop bombs, and commit all sorts of murder and mayhem, and then swear to you that they didn't do it. I wish we lived in that place you're talking about, Kathy, but we don't. And I'm not the least bit being patronizing to you or condescending, because you and I have this ongoing discussion damn near 24/7. So however this sounds on the radio, it's not condescending or patronizing of what Kathy just said. It is the real world. I agree, with everything Kathy is saying here.
She doesn't even act like there's a dispute. She acts like it's just a legitimate foregone conclusion that she is the rightful owner of those votes.
All right. Back to your phone calls. David is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, David. Hey, David. David. All right. Let's you put him on hold or whatever. Linda is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Linda.
Oh, hey. Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. I was really listening to your talk. I wanted to call and respond to the your first caller. That man has not done his homework. There was an agreement. In fact, the Democrats in Michigan were told, if you do this, they will not count. There was an agreement between both campaigns. Well, it won't count. And Hillary is quoted as saying, well, this doesn't count. So why is it counting now?
Well, because she's losing.
She is acting. Now, I'm a black woman. She is acting and operating like a typical white girl. And I got to tell you, Mike, we are watching this. And if she thinks we have short memories, we do not have short memories. I've talked to too many other people who look like me, mm-hmm. who watch this. And no, we're not dealing with Hillary. We're sick of Hillary. Hillary needs to go on. In fact, we know that she wants something. So what is it that she wants?
Mm-hmm.
We understand that she, if she wanted the VP, which, God, I hope she doesn't. But if she wanted the VP, they would give it to her. They would give it to her. They would have at the convention, they would have to vote her in the delegates as VP. That is hers if she wants it. Now, if she doesn't want it, and she's operating like she's still on a campaign, which since February, we know the numbers weren't adding up since February. Okay?
I hear you.
Now, what is it that she wants? Because she is tearing up the Democratic Party. She's tearing it up.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody else doing what she's doing. She is the one tearing it up. And at this particular point in time, all I want to know is, what does she want?
Right. She wants the nomination.
No, she can't have that.
Well,
we want her.
I hear you.
Well, anyway, that's all I had to say.
All right. Thanks, Linda. I appreciate you checking in. I appreciate it. Take care. And Linda speaks a pretty much universal truth. You know, not every white person speaks for white America, not every black person speaks for black America, but I'll tell you what, when you hear a black person use the pronoun we, they come a lot closer to a consensus than when a white person says we. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and we all know what the reasons are, and if you don't know, you're a fool, and you should know. So when Linda says what she says about Hillary's acting like your typical white woman, there is a mountain of truth in that, a mountain of truth. Again, there's so many issues that this race between a white woman and a black man are bringing up, so many issues that America has buried for centuries. We can't deal with these issues. Women only got the right to vote in 1920. Black folk only got the right to vote without fear of being lynched about 45 years ago. We can't handle this. We can't handle this. The issues that are being brought up, we can't handle it because America was founded on racism and genocide. America was founded on documents that God bless the founders for suggesting that they were going to hand these documents off and hope that future generations would modify them as necessary. But when those documents were originally codified and put into effect, they were horrible unless you were a white male landowner. Then they were wonderful. And we can't handle that. We can't handle that. So the issues that are being brought up, when Linda talks about she's acting like a typical white woman, probably, and again, this is not a patronizing statement, probably 95% of white people hearing that don't know what Linda means. And it's not because 95% of white people are inherently stupid. It's because 95% of white people don't pay attention to what's happening in the, quote, black community, end quote, for the past 300 years.
Slavery? Yeah, well, I'm glad that's over. Thank God for Abraham Lincoln. What else is on? What are we talking about here? Voting rights? Oh, okay. Well, I don't know what.
This is just one more example of that divide that's in this country that's being brought out, and everybody is being kicked in the ass with it. We're just being kicked in the ass with the race thing. All of a sudden, it's right in front of us. And the gender thing. Bang! This is difficult stuff. About 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, the podcast manager, Bob Alexander, resident philosopher, Bridget Wolf, a writer in residence, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Catherine Bay, the executive producer. Let's go back to your phone calls. Oh, one last time, I want to remind you for our Phoenix KPHX listeners and people listening to Nova M streamed on the internet. Stay tuned after this program, which ends in about 10 minutes. There'll be some news and then continuing live coverage of tonight's primary election results with Jeff Farias of KPHX 1480 in Phoenix. So stick around for that, okay? Sean is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? It's a pleasure to talk to you after all these years.
Well, my pleasure.
Hey, thank you. I just got a quick question.
Yeah.
If Hillary had the most delegates, but Obama had the popular vote, would she be saying Obama should be the nominee?
No, she probably wouldn't.
I'm so sick of this. No, I used to support Hillary, but I got so tired of the whole thing. It's just, you know, I just hope we can come together and beat the party and all these immature voters who are saying, oh, I would not vote for Obama, I'll go vote for McCain.
Yeah.
They're whack jobs.
Yeah, they're crazy. They're out of their minds.
My best to Molly and to your wife, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. All right, take care. You know, political ambition is one thing. You can one can appreciate the ambition of people who display that they have an ethical center where it concerns politics, if that is still possible. You can think of candidates that way. Bob mentioned one tonight, two tonight actually, Eugene McCarthy and Bobby Kennedy. And however seriously you take, from an historical perspective, their candidacies for president, I think it was clear that they both were ambitious, but for the right reasons, politically ambitious for the right reasons. And when I think of the ambition of Hillary and Bill Clinton, separately or together, it's kind of just tacky, because it is ambition for power. There is nothing that Hillary Clinton will or will not do that John McCain or George Bush or Bill Clinton will or will not do. I think Barack Obama is an unknown force right now. But to see the kind of ambition that is just naked and aggressive and is there strictly for the sake of power, haven't we had enough of that? Haven't we just had enough of that? I mean, honest to God. And how do you tell when ambition, political ambition, becomes naked and aggressive and strictly for the sake of power itself? By paying attention to what the candidate says, whether it is for county commissioner or president of the United States. If all of a sudden code words are trotted out, phrases are used, insinuating comments are made, or your surrogates start making them, you know, if I don't think, I think one of the standout moments for a negative reason of this campaign was when Hillary Clinton was on one of the Sunday talk shows. Was it Judas Stephanopoulos? I forget who it was. Maybe it was media whore number one, Tim Russert. But she was asked about the comments out there that Barack Obama is really a secret Muslim. And Hillary Clinton had an opportunity to immediately just beat that to the ground, stomp on its head, kill it, let its brain splatter out on the pavement. And what did she say? Well, he says he's not. Or some other weak-ass, nasty comment like that, rather than saying, what difference does it make? Or, no, you know damn good and well he's not, Russert. You know he's a Christian, like I am. But even if not willing to go that far, just an answer like, what difference does it make? Christian, Muslim, Jew, what difference does it make? But no. Neither of those answers came out of her mouth. Something smarmy and slick and political, and something that displayed just naked, aggressive, I would do any goddamn thing to get this nomination, came out of her mouth. And that's the part of Hillary Clinton that has emerged in this campaign that, like one of my callers tonight, has turned me completely against her candidacy, along with her voting record.
See, I remember in 2000 when there was the voting controversy, and I remember Hillary and Bill talking about how important it was to count all the votes, specifically in Florida. And I guess the irony is just slapping me in the face that now she wants to throw up her hands and say, no, don't count the votes. Just count my votes. Don't count all the votes. Let's pretend that all those people voted for me. And if you question the legitimacy of these elections, well, you're the crazy one. Those were completely legit. That's the problem. Does she really believe? I mean, does she believe those were fair elections in Michigan?
I don't.
That the people who were voting legitimately had their votes counted correctly and it was all above board.
Well, I don't think she does believe they were fair in the context that you mean elections.
And how can she claim them?
Because she is Hillary Clinton. This is exactly what I was just talking about. This kind of naked, aggressive ambition that has nothing to do with leading the country and everything to do with power. I just honestly believe that. I don't think Hillary Clinton has a vision for this country. If she does, will somebody send me an email tonight or tomorrow and tell me what it is? Everything that I have heard during this campaign from her, everything that I have been able to parse out of her voting record, indicates that she has zero vision. It is more of the same. It's continued the same old, same old. It's what Bob Alexander said tonight. Some of these right-wingers, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, keep telling us, well, let me do the tweaking, but all we have to do is tweak the system. That's a goddamn lie. What we need to do is take this system by its throat and shake it until it screams, and then see if it's still alive. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.